You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer,
where readers and writers meet, and story
is everything. We're Jim and Bobby Bell, your hosts for tonight.
And we're delighted that you're joining us. If you're listening live from LA Talk Radio's website, or you're watching us live on LA Talk Radio's Facebook page, welcome. We're delighted to have you with us. Hey, what music was that?
Hey, Alex Dormont. Hot Texas Swing Band.
Yes, and we're so delighted they give us the permission to play a little bit of Hot Texas every week to open and close the show. And who's our guest tonight?
Mike Toriano.
Yeah, Mike, welcome, Mike. There he is.
Hey. Hi, Bobby Jean and Jim. How are you?
Hi, Mike.
We're good. We're so delighted to have you with us. You want to?
Thanks for having me.
We do have a little intro. You want me to read that?
Absolutely. Go ahead and let's get Mike all settled in. Yeah.
Mike will give us more, but just a little short bio. Mike Toriano has a military background as a student of American history. He has written for magazines and newspapers for many years. An experienced editor, he's also taught university level English and journalism. In his novels, he brings his readers back in time with him as he recreates Western life in mid to late 19th century America. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you.
We're delighted to have you with us. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit more, you know, fill in, we gave some bare skeleton there. Go ahead and fill us a little bit more in, Mike, on your background.
Well, I grew up in Ohio, and how I started writing was I got the motivation, believe it or not, back in fifth grade. And I didn't get to really act on it until I retired. But throughout my career, I was always writing, editing. I was involved with newspapers, magazines, teaching, English, etc. But to show you what an impact a teacher can have, back in fifth grade there, I had a teacher who made us read a book a week, write a report, and then someone was going to give that report in class, so he had to be ready. So the first week, she took us down to our little school library, which was really just one shelf of books at an end of the cafeteria. And she said, pick something out. And so I'm looking there, and I see this book spine, and it says Zane Grey. And I thought to myself, that's an interesting name. What's a Zane Grey? And so I pulled it off, and I read that book, and I was hooked. I mean, I could see the cowboys and Indians racing along the base of those red sandstone bluffs in the Painted Desert, and I was all in on the Old West. And so it's been a lifelong ambition of mine to start writing about the Old West, just like my inspiration Zane Grey did.
Mm-hmm. You made an interesting comment when we chatted, you know, earlier this week, and he made the comment about, you know, why Westerns are important today. And before we get to talk about the featured book we're going to talk about tonight, White Sands Gold. Since you are writing Westerns, Mike, tell us why is the Western still so important?
Well, Bobby Jean, think about our society today. Think about all the chaos, the turbulence, the I don't know how to make sense of everything today, but things were more black and white back in the old West. And I kind of lean toward that black and white scenario where there weren't 50 shades of gray, if you will. There were things you were supposed to do back then and things you weren't supposed to do. And if you did some of the things you weren't supposed to do, there were consequences, as opposed to many times today. And those consequences back then were often immediate and violent. Mm-hmm. And so I've always been drawn to that kind of a climate, that kind of a situation where you know where the boundaries are, you know what you can and can't do. And the Old West just really appealed to me as a writer.
So let's talk a little bit. We're just going to go ahead and get into this book without we're going to notify our listeners. We're going to really try to avoid, we're not going to do spoiler alerts. We're going to really avoid
giving away the secrets.
Because we want you to read this book.
All right.
But tell us a little bit about White Sands Gold. And there is a question right on the cover. Can a killer still be an honorable person? And then today, Mike, we found a quote of Aristophanes, the Greek playwright. What's that quote, Jim? You got it there.
Oh, I tell you.
We wanted your take on this, too.
And this fellow goes back a couple years.
Oh, yeah, Greek.
He was born in 446 BC.
Yeah.
Okay. His thought is, there is no honest man, not one, that can resist the attraction of gold. Way back then.
So we thought, we kind of agreed with that. And then we thought about this book, and then we weren't sure that we agreed with that. So tell us a little bit about the backstory to White Sands Gold, how it came about,
sure,
and maybe a little bit about research that you did. And then we'll get a little bit more into some actual things without giving secrets away.
Okay, good. If I start to give any of the secrets away, spoilers, you just mute me.
Yeah, we'll rein you in.
All right. So a couple of years ago, a good friend of mine said, I've got the idea for your next book. And he told me about the legend of this gold that's supposed to be hidden under a peak in New Mexico territory. Well, now New Mexico. But that's been there for who knows how long. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of sources for how it got there. But no one knows for sure. And I'm listening to him and I'm thinking, really? Really? Is this any of this true? Mm-hmm. And so I went home and I put in my browser. I just put in White Sands Gold. And boom! All this material popped up there, and I'm just leaping through site after site after site, and I'm thinking, wow, how come I haven't ever heard of this before? And so I started noodling on the legend itself and the mystery surrounding it, and I decided to add another mysterious twist to the gold bars. And then as I was thinking about this, some of the characters just revealed themselves. Mm-hmm. Some of the main characters just revealed themselves, and I was off and running.
Yes. So you got the idea, and you did some research. And you didn't let the research overwhelm you. You kind of said at some point, enough is enough. I've got enough.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of
no, go ahead.
How much time did you spend on research?
I spend a fair amount. I've also have one of my daughters who is my chief researcher, and she helped quite a bit as well. So I've got a bit of a home court advantage there. But I also did some in-person research on the actual territory itself and driving around where I could, but you can't get to Victoria. And so I got as close as I could driving around, and I studied the landscape, and I studied the climate and the vegetation. And I then started to have a better idea of what things look like. Although it's interesting because 150 years ago, which is, well, let's say 130 years ago,
right,
the vegetation was different in this section of New Mexico territory. They were grazing lots of cattle there along the Rio Grande. But today you couldn't do that. And so it's interesting how the landscape and the vegetation has changed over the years, but it was good for me to be on site so I could get a better feel for the layout.
Gotcha.
In one of the scenes, we have a character, Lottie, and she takes on horseback. She goes from Las Cruces to El Paso. Yes. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was speaking with Jim earlier about the book, and I said, you know, one of the wonderful things about this author, about Mike's writing, is you allow the reader's imagination to fill in the blank. You give us enough information that we can taste and smell and feel the landscape or a situation, but you don't hit us over the head with it. So we're able as readers to really vividly experience what your characters are experiencing. And that ride, I thought about that because we've done that by car, you know, from Albuquerque to El Paso. And I thought about, you must have taken that drive yourself. And I wonder, did you do it by car or by horseback, or how did you do that yourself?
I think if I tried to do it by horseback, I would have taken about 2 20-gallon water jugs. I don't think the horse could have taken that. No, I drove.
You drove.
I drove, yeah.
Yeah. Do you, so you got the idea and you sat down and you knew you wanted to write the story. So did you outline, or did you just put pen to paper, or fingers to keyboard? How did you get started?
I'm a fingers to the keyboard kind of guy. There's, as you know, there's a couple types of writers. There's a plotter who does all the sticky notes on the bulletin board, and scene one, scene two, scene three, et cetera, and the characters and lines everything out. And sometimes I wish I could do that, but by golly, I'm a seat of the pants writer, known as Pantser. I'm a pantser. And I like to joke that if you look in the dictionary under pantser, you're going to see my picture.
Oh, we were going to put that in your intro. Oh, well, the next time you're on, Mike, we'll be sure to mention that.
Okay. Yeah, no, I just start writing.
So do the characters, how do they, do you already have some in mind, or do they also just come as you start writing?
They come as I start writing. I mean, I had an idea that I would have a male protagonist, Twill, but then I also wanted at least one female protagonist, and I ended up with two. And they're very strong women, both Ma and Lottie. And I was just delighted to see how they developed. Both very different characters. Ma being able to control this rough bunch of guardians with just a lift of an eyebrow.
Yeah, that's true.
And then Lottie growing into her steadfastness, into her courage, into her character. It was just fun to see developed.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a do you have a question about?
How did you come up with the name Twill?
Yeah, Twill.
I have no idea.
He named himself.
I mean, I'd like to tell you that it came from this source or that source or whatever. It just occurred to me, but I will tell you that it is my absolute favorite character name of any of my books.
Okay.
Well, you know, Mike, what I began to think about as I thought of the names is you do give us several threads of story. And Twill is one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I do tend to have three or four threads going throughout all of my books. And in this one, we've got Twill and the Guardians. And then we've got Lottie and what she's up to. And then we've got Ma kind of in the background, but she is more than in the background. Mm-hmm. She's pulling strings.
Yeah, she's in charge.
Mm-hmm.
You know that about
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah. With grace and poise, but I think of her a little like a velvet hammer. You don't want to, you know, she may look frail, but she's also got a backbone that's like that, you know, hammer or steel. She's, yeah, she's a woman of the Old West. You know, they're not all, so often the women of the West seem to be sort of damsels in distress or, you know, they wouldn't have, you know, the women you're writing about, they're survivors.
Yeah, they are. The women of the Old West were anything but damsels in distress. They were as tough as the men. They were as hardy as the men. And they could give as well as that they got.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really enjoy creating strong female characters because that's accurate. That's the way it was.
You have there's a question you always like to. Oh, go ahead.
No, Ma, Ma has a lot of secrets.
Oh, yeah, Ma has secrets.
And we can't really tell too many of them. But it seems like as we go along in the book, we bring out another secret and another secret.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have those all lined up to start with, or did this kind of occur as you wrote the story?
Good question.
Because maybe Ma had a life of her own, you know. Did she take on a life of her own, you know? Sometimes characters get out of control.
Yeah, yeah. Is Mike? Oh, Mike looks like he could have just frozen for a moment. Mike, can you hear us? Oh,
see me?
Yeah, we got you.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know what happened there, but
that's okay.
Yeah, no, I didn't know who she was when I introduced her. But you know what? I would really enjoy doing is maybe doing a prequel and find out where she came from.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were chatting a little bit about this the other night because the book is open sort of for a potential sequel. But when you brought up prequel, I had already been thinking that. In fact, I was thinking you could do a whole prequel series. You could go back. You could go back. We don't want to spoil alert here, but you could go back and back. And back. And
it's
back.
Like Yellowstone, huh?
Because you have an element there that is from an ancient time. And I think it'd be really interesting to see sort of where it starts and how it moves along. So I would encourage you to think about several prequels, Mike.
Okay, I'll add that to the list.
Did your characters, any one of your characters, do anything that just surprised you and you said, no, I'm not writing you that way. No. And your character said yes and insisted. Did you have any of those situations?
Without giving too much away, yes, I did have one character that, surprised me and surprised me in how I handled that character.
Mm.
One of the other characters that I enjoyed, though, was Deputy Sanders.
I like him.
Deputy Marshall.
I like him.
You know, and O provided a little bit of humor.
Yeah.
I won't say comic relief, but he was a lighthearted kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And I believe that in any story where you've got a lot of drama, tension, conflict, you got to let the reader up off the mat every now and then.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
you do.
So O provided that outlet, I think, in this particular story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You shared that this book has already won 3 awards. What awards has this book won so far, Mike?
Well, there's a Firebird Book Award, and then American Book Award, and then last one is Literary Titan, a gold award from Literary Titan. So
congratulations.
Very pleased with that.
Yes. And you have over 50 reviews on Amazon, and I think just about every one of them is a 5-star. There might be 1 4-star in there, and I don't know what they were thinking. But
you should be my publicist.
Well, that's what we hope this platform will do for our guests, is have that opportunity to share your story and then have thousands of people down the road, you know, whether you're watching or listening tonight or you are doing that down the road. We are going to take a very quick break, and since we're talking about your books, all 4 of your titles are available at bookshop.org on our Out West Shop affiliate bookshop page. So here's a little bit about Out West Shop Bookshop. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. A special guest tonight, Mike Floriano. You know, we have a question. You know, we talked the other night, and we were talking about something called the Cowboy Code.
Yeah, yeah.
Could you want to say a couple words about that?
Yeah, I would. Again, this harkens back to what I was talking about earlier. One of the things that attracted me to Westerns, writing Westerns, was that it was a black and white society, right and wrong. And the Code of the West was an informal, unwritten set of principles and ways of behaving. And it was particularly prominent in areas of the Old West that had no law, which was most of the Old West. Unless you were in a city or town of some size, there was no law. There were circuit marshals would ride around in some of these areas, but they were few and far between. And so over time, a set of principles that came to be informally known as the Code of the West developed so that, you know, you had some order. You could bring some sense of peace to chaos. Which had been otherwise chaos. And so that Code of the West is something that I've always related to, kind of resonated with me. And I've got just a few, there were any number of principles, but there were some that overlapped a lot of different ones. In fact, Gene Autry had a Code of the Cowboy. Mm-hmm. But the Code of the West had some that I think are particularly relevant even today. Keep your word. Mm-hmm. Keep your word. Know where to draw the line. Boy, could we use more of that, couldn't we?
Yeah, sure could.
When you make a promise, keep it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Keep mm-hmm. your promises. Some things are not for sale. Mm-hmm. Again, these are just spot on things that still we should be abiding by. Mm-hmm. And then finally, always tell the truth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've always liked the Ride for the Brand, which has had many different kind of understandings over the years. It could be that, you know, the outfit that you worked for, whatever their brand was, you were riding for that brand. It didn't mean you're wearing a Ralph, you know, Lauren shirt and it's got the brand on it and you're, you know, you're riding for Ralph Lauren. It really has to do with, you know, who are you loyal to? Is it your family? Who are you loyal to? And are you riding with that loyalty with everything that you, that you do?
That's a big one. In fact, I was watching, I think it's episode 8 of season 5 of Yellowstone the other night.
Uh-huh.
And Rip was talking to one of the new hands there on the ranch. And he said, when you ride for the brand, you ride for the brand. And so that's still in use and still known somewhat in today's society. But yes, those values are timeless.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be reminded of them because they've almost disappeared from any public discussion. Mm-hmm. You don't see those kinds of things pop up. Yeah.
Yeah. They were gathered together in, and you made reference to this. I remember when this book first came out, 2004, Jim Owens, the 10 guiding principles in his book, Cowboy Ethics, What Wall Street Can Learn from the Code of the West. And, you know, I worked in a museum store at that time, and we brought that book in. In fact, he even may have come to do a presentation, and we couldn't keep that book in stock. It just seemed to be speaking to anybody and everybody that picked it up. And again, it's like we need those reminders. It's so easy to get them misplaced today. Yeah.
It's a great book, and he did a wonderful job with it. Again, The Code of the West, What Wall Street Could Learn from The Code of the West.
Let's see. Do you want to ask about his typical writing day?
Well, first of all, I wanted to ask about how long did it take you to write the book, White Sands?
Oh, it took a little over a year to do that one. But I'm pretty slow. I mean, the third one that's out, A Score to Settle, took me almost 2 years from start to finish publication. So, yeah, it'll vary a little bit with the book and how quickly I see the way ahead, because I don't know what's going to happen in the story when I sit down to write more about that particular scene that I'm in. I percolate on things, and I was, as we were talking about before the broadcast, I've come to see some value in insomnia, because that's when I get some of my best ideas.
That's good. Are you doing other projects when you were writing the book, this novel? I mean, were there other things you write, any short stories, any publications, or were you still, or are you still teaching?
No, I'm not teaching anymore. And when I'm writing a book, like I have sent the next manuscript into my publisher already and waiting to hear on that. And then I'm writing the next one now. But when I'm writing I tend to try to keep the other things that I'm doing to a minimum there, because it takes me a while to figure out where things are going.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a specific schedule, or you just write when you got a thought?
with a glass of wine in his hand.
Oh, golly. As I have mentioned, I probably have every defect that a writer could have. One of which is being very undisciplined. I don't have set writing times. I know a lot of my writer friends who do, and golly, that is just great. But I write when I think of the next thing that happens in that scene. I'll sit down and write. And it may be, well, I call it nibbling at the manuscript.
That's good.
But no, I'm not on a set schedule at all. But it seems to work.
Is writing dialogue a challenge for you or not?
That's an interesting question. That is one of the things that is not difficult for me. For whatever reason, dialogue seems to flow pretty well and pretty quickly. I know what people are going to say. When you know the character pretty well, you have an idea of what they might say in a certain situation. And as far as period dialogue, how they might say it, which is true with the Old West, because some of the dialogue that we have in my Westerns, young people today would probably say, what?
What?
What is he talking about?
Yeah. Is it difficult to write from a woman's perspective?
I hesitate to say yes on that, because obviously I don't have that experience. So I try to make sure that I'm being respectful to that character, that female character. I may not get her motivations exactly right, or I may not get her dialogue exactly right, but I'm going to respect that character and how they interact in the storyline.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not a spoiler alert, really. We know it's a Western. There are some characters that aren't going to make it out alive. Is it challenging to, you know, take a character away?
Yeah, it really is. I in one of my previous books, I had a semi-main character who didn't make it. And I was appearing at a book club in person. And I don't know if I told you this.
But no, but I can imagine.
I was appearing at a book club, and I had made a presentation, and I was starting to take questions, and this lady stands up and she says, how could you, you know, kill off so-and-so, you know? And I mean, she was, realistically, she was angry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that means you wrote a really great character.
Yeah. But it is difficult to say goodbye to a character once you kind of fall in love with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, although some of those characters we can't get rid of.
I know some of them is like, now take that character out now. What do you mean? We're gonna have to wait more.
Yeah, I had a number of people who would give me feedback on one particular character in White Sands Gold, and they'd say, "How come you let that person live that long?" Yeah.
We're going to take another quick break, Mike. And when we come back, let's just talk for a moment about writer's block. Let's see if you get it or not. And Sam, let's hear a little word from Out West Shop.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer on LA Talk Radio. And by the way, when you shop at outwestshop.com, use coupon code RADIO and save $10 off a purchase of $75 or more. And we're back with our featured guest, Mike Toriano. Yeah. We've been talking about his book, White Sands Gold and Other Things. So Mike, tell us, do you get writer's block, writer's pause, right in the corner? And if you do, how do you get in and out of it?
I have that all the time. As I said, I have every defect known to writers. And one of them is writer's block. I don't sit down to write until I've got something to say. So that's a version of writer's block. I don't sit down at a mid-scene and think about what happens next. I've thought about what happens next before I sit down to complete that scene. So that's a form of writer's block, but it's also a form of percolation.
Mm-hmm. We've heard some writers share something similar, and they might say, I see it almost more like a pause, and I just need to have a little opportunity to kind of think it through, and then usually a solution will come to me. And I may have to go back and go back to right before I had the problem. I may have to adjust something, but they don't necessarily see it as a block as much as an opportunity to tighten something up or go a different direction or introduce a new character or something like that. It sounds like sort of what you deal with. You're not stuck for days and weeks and months, it doesn't sound like.
No. usually something will happen to key the next interaction or the next dialogue or the next resolution of a conflict or something like that. Yeah.
Now, you were sharing a very interesting story with us the other night. You want to ask about his publisher?
Well, yeah. I think you had a story about your publisher, Wilder Rose Press.
Yeah. How did you find each other?
Well, I had sent many years ago, I'd sent my first manuscript, which is actually set just before and during the Civil War. It's coming of age story. I sent it in to agents and editors. I don't know how many, but it was 50 or 60 or so. Yeah. And most of the time you don't hear from an agent or editor in response to a query letter that's unsolicited. So I wasn't surprised when I hadn't heard anything. And then I got a request from a couple of publishing houses to send in a manuscript, which I did, and then I didn't hear anything or whatever. And I finally got a rejection letter from an editor at the Wild Rose Press. And I was very impressed with it, though, because she took the time to go categorically through all the weaknesses in my story. It wasn't a form letter. It was obvious she spent some time going over this. And so I was very impressed with that. And so, I don't know, 8-9 months later, I emailed her again and I said, you don't remember me, but you rejected me for this manuscript, but you did it so nicely that I remembered it, and I'm writing a Western now, and I wondered if anybody at Wild Rose would be interested in seeing it. And she said, literally, send it to me when it's ready. Mm-hmm. And we had some fun earlier when I said that probably will be inscription on my tombstone. Send it to me when it's ready. But and I did send in The Reckoning to her, and then kind of forgot about it because it had been several months, and I got a congratulations email from her. So a rejection led to my first contract. So mm-hmm. if any other early on writers are out there tonight, don't be dismayed. Don't be disappointed, because good things can come out of where you least expect them.
Mm-hmm. What's the best investment you've made in your literary career?
I think it's all the reading I've done over a lifetime. And you don't necessarily understand the impact of that reading until later on. But I sometimes am asked, well, where do you get this? And where do you get that about the old West? And I said, I've just read and read and read over time. And apparently some of it actually seeped in.
Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. That's a great answer. And there are several, I think Stephen King is one that talks about you need to be reading, reading, reading. You know, you need to be reading. And of course, we're going to take another quick break, Mike, and we're going to hear from our friends at Tuscany Bay Books, another great publisher.
Very good.
Hey, everybody. Richard Paulinelli with Tuscany Bay Books. And if you're a reader looking for the next best adventure for your summertime reading or, you know, coming up on the winter, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com and check out our amazing bookshelf filled with books by some of the best authors out there in science fiction, fantasy, mystery thrillers, westerns, you name it. We've got something for you to read. And if you're an author who has just finished your manuscript and you're looking for a publisher, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com. Fill out our submission form. We'll take a look at it and we'll see if we can get you published and get you doing what you should be doing, which is writing your very next book. TuscanyBayBooks.com. That's your place to go if you're a reader or a writer. And now back to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. And tonight's special guest again, Mike Toriano. Mike, we have a question.
Yes, sir.
Do you have some tips for some for current writers or up and coming writers?
I suppose one of the things that I would suggest to especially younger writers is we all do research, but don't let your research get in the way of your writing.
Right.
And just sit down and write. Worry about polishing it up later. I write terrible first drafts, but they're first drafts. Mm-hmm. And the words are down on the page. I can always go back and polish them, but getting them down on the page is the key. It sounds simple and obvious, but you got to get the words on the page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't edit a blank page, can you, Mike?
Oh, that's good.
I can't claim that. No, I can't claim that for my own. I'm thinking that could have been a guest, Tosca Lee, or it even could have been Jim Christina. But the first time I heard it, I had that same thought, like, yeah, that is so true.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Oh, well, where can people find you, Mike? Where can they get your book and find out where you might be making appearances? And oh, and also, what's coming up next?
Ah, okay. You can go to my website, which is www.miketoriano.com, and find all my books. sign up for my newsletter. You get a free copy of my.
Yes, we did.
You get a free copy of my short story, The Trade, which I dearly love. But there are buttons all over that website where to read samples of my books, where to buy them on Amazon, principally. And as far as what I'm working on now, I mentioned that my next manuscript is at my publisher's right now. Title is Fireflies at Dusk, which I just love that title. And so hopefully that'll be coming out sometime this summer. And then I'm currently about halfway into the third book in what I call the South Park series. So The Rendezvous, The Reckoning, and now The Return will be the third book in that series. So there's where I am.
Very exciting. Very exciting. Well, once again, tonight we were mostly speaking about White Sands Gold, and then touching on Mike as an author and his impact and insights into the writing world. So much fun, Mike. We really thank you. Don't go away. We really thank you for being with us. And we're just going to take a moment to say thank you to all of you that tuned in, maybe live tonight or will be listening down the road. We want to thank Sam Hassan, of course, and LA Talk Radio. And we've got, who do we have coming up next week?
We got it right here, Cash on Cash by
a good friend of ours, Robert Burke Warren. Let me get the name right, Robert. This book just came out last fall, and as soon as I saw him posted on Facebook, I got reached out to him, and so he is with us next week. This is, of course, a nonfiction book. He has edited this, and it's all, I think, never before interviews, published interviews with The Man in Black, with Johnny Cash, and we're very excited to have Robert with us next week. You have a quote, I think, don't you, honey, to take us out tonight?
We have another one. This one was a little later than the fellow from Athens.
Yeah, a little more contemporary than Aristophanes.
Yeah, a little more contemporary. But we know this guy, Mark Twain.
Yeah, we know him personally, of course.
There comes a time in every rightly constructed boy's life when he has a raging desire to go somewhere and dig for hidden treasures.
And our question to you is,
what treasure are you searching for this year?
And write about it.
Write about it. Oh, my goodness.
Good prompt.
Well, I'm looking at the clock on the wall. And, Mike, we are out of time. Please stay in touch. We want to know as soon as the next book is out. We wouldn't even mind being, what do they call it? You know, beta readers or pre-reader readers? Or what's that right term?
Advanced readers.
Advanced readers. Advanced readers. We'd love to be an advanced reader, would we?
Okay. All right. I may take you up on that.
Thank you again for being with us. And on behalf of Jim and myself, till we meet again. Next week, remember,
it's always
a great day out west. See you next week.
Okay. Thank you.
You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.